Hi, everybody. This is Laurie Handler, and this program is Contra Cafe, a program for spiritual enlightenment. And today, I have a very unique and interesting subject for the show. I have to admit that I don't know that much about it. Some people would find it a little scary, I think, and I know that I do. And some would find it really hot as a fantasy, very exciting and tantalizing, and I know I do. Maybe you're like me. You'll find it both, or maybe you'll find it a little repulsive. I don't know. I have no idea how you'll respond to it, but for me, it's a little bit scary, and for me, it's a pretty hot topic. It's a pretty hot fantasy thing. So my show today is about BDSM, bondage, domination, sadomasochism, and what a juicy, scary, hot, and even hidden topic. My guest today is Dr. Gloria Braum. She has a PhD in human sexuality. She's an author, a clinical sexologist, a sex therapist in private practice in Georgia, as well as a sex blogger. Gloria researches and writes about sex from A to Z, but specializes in BDSM fetish sex. And Gloria and I met on Facebook. That's how we became familiar with each other. Her topics really interested me. I was really drawn to things that she would post, like old pictures, drawings from old books from different cultures. And also, she would post pictures of doors or wall hangings or things like that that in my world of Tantra very much interested me. And so I would look at these things, and then I would go to her blog. And then one day I just started writing to her. She seemed like one of the most interesting people that I've ever come across on Facebook. So I invited her to be on my show. So it's my pleasure to introduce you to Gloria Braum. Gloria, how did you get interested in your topic?
I got interested in my topic because it was my own sexual identity, and I started out, I guess, looking for answers to why certain things turn me on and why other things that seem to turn a lot of other people on kind of left me feeling high and dry.
Wow. So how early is this? Would you say, I mean, you have a PhD in human sexuality, so you must have known from a really early age that you had to explore sex, yeah?
Yeah, I think like a lot of kinky people, you know, I kind of sort of knew even when I was a little kid that I responded to things and to different things. I responded to things differently. And I responded to different things than many of my friends. I was just telling a client earlier, for example, when I was little, I was completely fascinated by, you know, pirate movies and movies where people got tied up, or, you know, if I saw a spanking in a movie or on, you know, in a television show. Stuff like that always intrigued me long before I had any kind of notion that it was even sexual or it connected to my sexuality. And then in my adolescence, some of those connections started to be made. In other words, when I was exploring sex, I was always more interested in odd stuff. You know, if people had odd interests or odd quirks or fetishes, I was always really intrigued by it and always willing to explore. And for me, I guess it was a process and an evolution, because even though I had many odd fantasies and desires, and even though I knew what I liked in bed, probably like a lot of your listeners, I too felt very intimidated by the labels,
right,
and wondered what
right.
they meant. And right, yeah.
Well, and you and I have talked a little bit about how BDSM can actually be a transformational form of sexuality. It could be transformation without a doubt. So we're going to weave into that, and I imagine, yeah, it's a little scary. I mean, BDSM. It has the labels have so much attached to them. I think if people dressed in, you know, wow, that movie. There was a movie about World War II where somebody's dressed up as some Brunhilde in like a Nazi leather outfit with whips and things, and it was a Lena Wardwell movie. And I think of that as being the
Seven Beauties.
The scary. Yeah, it. Seven Beauties. What a great movie.
That's my favorite. That's like my favorite movie of all time.
All right, so,
but
so
not for the obvious reasons. Not just because there was a femdom in it, but yeah. You know, and actually, I think one of the difficulties for me when I was in my 20s in terms of even connecting to the BDSM community, such as it was back in the 1980s, was simply that I really had never had that kind of fantasy. I never fantasized about Nazis, for one. I'm Jewish, you know. So I definitely did not go down that route. I didn't fantasize about masters and slaves like in the fanciful pre-Civil War South, you know. I mean, a lot of the things that people consider to be fixtures, I didn't, obviously, being a woman and kind of heterosexual, didn't fantasize about leather-clad goddesses, you know, whose feet I worshipped. You know, none of that, and those were all the things that I thought S&M was about, and I thought if you didn't do that stuff, and a lot of intense pain, and I thought if you didn't do that stuff or like to feel that stuff, then you weren't kinky. So probably for me, one of the most liberating revelations was that not only did normal people do this, and, you know, not just crazy movie characters, but, you know, your friends and neighbors and colleagues, you know, just normal people.
Right.
But also that, you know, kink in itself is really, or as I see it, is actually a kind of hedonism and individual self-expression, and that it can actually take a lot of different forms, which on the surface might not even look to most people like what they seem to think S&M is about.
Right. So
there are a lot.
So what we're saying, I mean, when you first started talking, first of all, I want to relate it to Tantra, because I always say that Tantra is transformation through pleasure. And then, of course, in the study of Tantra, what comes up when people are focusing on pleasure and on that being the door to bliss and the door to ecstasy, what ends up happening is everything that isn't pleasure comes up.
Mm-hmm.
All the pain in their life, everything they've ever suffered, all the pain, all the suffering they continue to be addicted to. So that's kind of figurative. And in what you're talking about seems to me sort of literal, like how people can go to some things, some fetishes, some different practices or different sensations, and include all of that in their transformation, which is really the way I see Tantra. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think that BDSM is profoundly transformational on a lot of different levels for the individual. First of all, you know, there is simply the liberation of accepting, you know, accepting sexuality as neutral, neither bad nor good, but being good when bringing pleasure and being bad when causing unhappiness. You know.
Wow, that's liberating just in itself, just that statement.
Right, just that concept. You know, if you can suspend your judgment about, you know, the actual act that you may need to perform in bed, because everybody's quirky in bed. You know, everybody likes it just a little tiny bit different, or, you know, their parts are just slightly, centered in a different place than other people's, or they have different parts of their body that respond erotically. You know, if they allow themselves to open all the doors and put all judgment aside and just explore what makes them feel the maximum of pleasure without labels, I think, you know, you end up with a much healthier, more radiant sexual identity. And I think that cuts across everything, whether it's tantra or being gay or being a swinger or being a BDSM, or, you know, it's really opening, you know, opening wide the doors to perception, putting away your old judgments, and actually living in your body through your sexuality.
Well, I certainly, there's nothing I could say that I think is better than that. There's nothing in the world that I could possibly adhere to, teach, preach, coerce people into than what you just said. And finding in your own body whatever is pleasurable and opening yourself up, wrapping yourself up completely around that.
Right. So, for example, let's talk about pain, right? To most people, pain is something you avoid, something you don't want, to a healthy person, right? You know, it's the self-destructive person who seeks out, generally, unhappy pain, right? You know, let's say somebody who cuts themselves. I think we can all agree that's an unhealthy, unhappy kind of pain. But then there are numbers of people for whom intense sensation feels fantastic. It spiritually transforms them, or let's say there's a group in San Francisco centered around Fakir Muzaffar, and many people have, you know, explored that path or taken it even further. You know, there are a lot of people now who are doing flesh hooks, for example, hanging by. Something
well,
I personally
say
would
that,
do. Yeah, but
wait a second. But what was that term you used right before these suspension things?
Fakir Muzaffar. He's someone in San Francisco. He's been called a modern primitive, and he is somebody who has used his body for spiritual growth. And he will do extreme body modifications or extreme rituals of pain. But his purpose is to transcend. In other words, it's to accept that pain as part of the journey.
And you're likening that to these suspension. Lately, people are going to be they're suspending themselves with hooks in their own body.
Yes, because, you know, the point is that when you do experience that kind of pain, you have to bring your full focus onto exactly where you are in the moment it's happening. There's no time to think about, oh, you know, I should have given my dog an extra walker. What do I want to eat for dinner tomorrow night? you know, it's all about right here and right now, because it's so intense that your complete focus has to be on the moment. And that is very much part of the BDSM experience, because most people will tell you, you know, in the moment of whatever it is, whether it's the foot fetishist finally having some lovely boots to kiss, or the person who wants to be whipped to a certain level, in the moment, it's all about that moment. It's being authentic in that moment 100%.
Right, right.
And I think that is what really hooks people on the BDSM.
Now, you said you would never hang from hooks. I would never. In my left mind, I would never hang myself from hooks and put hooks. But I do know that the people who go to the Lakota Sundance, all these Sundancers that go to Native American ceremonies, they hook sticks in their arms and pull on them with some kind of rawhide and stuff. I know people that I consider to be completely sane who do that, and I would never put those sticks in my arm.
I wouldn't run a rope of cotton through my sinus passages either, and many yogis do that. You know, I mean, I will say that I would gladly help somebody do any of those things, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
needed to be, and if that's what felt right to them, if they were doing it in the right spirit, with the right purpose, because to me, as a sexologist and, you know, and a therapist and all that, to me, the point of sex, of any form of sex, whether it's just masturbating or just making out with somebody, or if it's hanging upside down and, you know, whatever it might be, the purpose should always be to build intimacy, to build,
right,
personal knowledge, you know, and self-identity, and to live through your body, and
right,
to be true
right.
to your own body. You see, I'm not going to be hanging off flesh hooks anytime soon because, you know, if there's a crumb on my sheets, I can't sleep out tonight. I just haven't, that's my body. I accept that I'm at peace with my ridiculous body, you know. But I see nothing wrong, and I don't judge anyone else for what they need because they have a different body.
Right.
On a different
Well, I just want to, we're going to pause here for a second. If you just are tuning in, you're listening to Tantra Cafe, a program for spiritual enlightenment. I'm Laurie Handler, your host, and my guest today is Dr. Gloria Brahm, who is a doctor in human sexuality, and we're talking about different strokes for different folks. We're talking about BDSM. So we'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned. This is such an interesting, amazing topic. If you're wondering how to get the absolute best from relationships, maybe the deep feeling of intimacy or the best sex or the most happiness, why not try getting yourself a copy of my book, Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy. Sex and happiness puts the innocence and love back into sex and gives Tantra the respect it deserves. Take charge of your life, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. Get Sex and Happiness by me, Laurie Handler, only $19.99 in paperback, and $14.99 ebook. You can order Sex and Happiness at sexandhappiness.com. That's sexandhappiness.com. Well, we're back, and if you've just started listening to the show, this is Tantra Cafe, a program for spiritual enlightenment. My guest today is Gloria Brahm, who I met on Facebook. Gloria researches and writes about sex from A to Z, and she specializes in fetish sex and BDSM. Gloria, I have to say, you know, so far, so great what we're talking about. I'm really excited about the topic and actually getting a little excited about the topic as we talk more about it. And I noticed you because on Facebook you put these amazing collections of things. Where do you find this stuff that you blog about?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm an obsessive researcher. And I'm, you know, for some reason, the subject of sex just never gets old to me. I can talk about it and write about it and work on it every day and enjoy it. And so I start surfing the Internet. I'll think of a topic or I'll think of, you know, maybe I'll see a piece of art and it'll give me an idea for something. And, you know, God bless Google is all I can say. Google takes me everywhere I need to go and, you know. That's how I find it. I find a lot of interesting stuff on eBay. I've become very expert at culling through their massive collections of erotica and stuff like that. So they've been a great source. And what I really love about them is that, to me, it's almost better than going to a museum or a gallery site where you know what you're going to get. On eBay, sometimes a collector will put something they found in their grandfather's basement, you know, from 1910, you know, and they'll put it up, and it'll only be there for 4 or 5 days, and then it's going to vanish into another private collection, never to be seen again. So those are particularly exciting finds for me because I have an opportunity, you know, a small window of opportunity to grab an image and put it on my blog and show my readers something that they would never, ever have a chance to see otherwise.
And give us your blog so that people can go there if they want to start seeing the great things that I've been seeing on there. Give them the address of the blog.
My name is Gloria Brahm, GLORIABRAME .typepad.com.
And they can find all these great things that you write about. I mean, I think I first started seeing you writing, there were some drawings that you noted that were, they seemed Middle Eastern. Oh, you were comparing. You were comparing some Middle Eastern slave market drawings.
Oh,
to,
and harems, probably, right?
Yes, that's right.
And
that's when I first
drawings.
Noticed
right.
you.
I did a show once, I guess about a year ago, just on harems. You know, just how harems are represented in art, you know, because that's when I get a theme or, you know, and I'll take it. In fact, tomorrow, you know, well, this will be airing later, but this week on my blog, I'm going to do a whole show on the image of Hercules, the image of the strong man, because as it turns out, you know, during all those centuries when you can't find any really extant erotic art, you certainly can find painting after painting after painting of nude, muscular Hercules. And I'm, you know, so I'm thinking, well, there was something for, you know, people to look at. A little
nudity. Yeah, some people had a fetish about that, about strong
men. I'm sure they did.
Body.
I'm sure there were a lot of fantasies around those mythical characters, because they were the only ones that you could actually see without clothes on, represented in art.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then there's, of course, there's all the statues by the famous Roman, the famous Italian artists, and all the things that you can see in Rome and Florence.
Right.
And people would...
Right. Once
I remember
upon
you had
a time,
a
those were really
50.
Shocking, scandalous things, you know?
It's amazing. It's amazing. What we, and also what we take for granted in art, and then things that were shocking and scandalous. So back to this, so I haven't seen a lot of fetish sex myself. I hear about it because I'm in the tantra world, and because I, you know, of the circles that I circulate in. But I understand that there's something called a dungeon in almost every single city, or maybe in every single city, and maybe even small town, at least in the United States. Is this something that you also know about?
Fetishes? Yes.
No, dungeons.
Oh, dungeons. Well, there are, people use the word loosely. It can mean a lot of different things. There are professional dungeons where sex workers, they don't, or we can call them professional dominatrices and occasionally professional submissives, enact fetish and BDSM fantasies for a fee. And then there are just lots and lots of people who create what they call a dungeon, which is really their dedicated BDSM space, where they'll have toys or equipment or, you know, all the playthings they like. And, you know, it'll be in a usually well-locked part of their home. Is
right, so the kids don't get in there.
So the kids can't get in there, and the, you know, the neighbors don't see when they're, you know, stumbling around looking for the bathroom, yeah. That kind of thing. Yeah.
So,
but they're not
so
actual.
Before,
they don't look like the dungeons of Europe. You know, they usually look like you know, nicely furnished carpeted spaces.
Okay. Well, I mean, someone mentioned to me that there were dungeons in, you know, like places like discotheques, only not discotheques, but dungeons that people actually go to and they watch enactments of BDSM and fetish things, and then they
right.
can participate or
but
not.
But what I'm saying is the term dungeon is really used as, you know, is sort of code for BDSM play space. Let's put it that way.
And it
you
could
know,
be anywhere.
Not,
it could be in somebody's home.
Yeah. It could be somebody's basement or attic or, you know, a side room, you know, depending on the couple. If they don't have kids, they can do it in their guest bedroom, you know. I mean, but it's just a dedicated space. And usually when people talk about dungeons in cities, what they usually mean, and particularly if they're open to the public, it means that they have a staff there who, for a fee, will enact scenarios, either by themselves so people can watch, or they'll engage with private customers.
I see.
Yeah, but that's
so
the commercial.
So in your
way.
Practice,
mm-hmm.
okay, that's commercial. I understand.
Mm-hmm.
I understand. So in your practice, let's find out a little bit more. In your practice, someone would come to you who, how would they find you? You would be listed as a sex therapist?
Yeah, I'm listed as a sex therapist, and there are not a lot of sex therapists. So if you type sex therapist Georgia, which is most people just Google me, or quite a number of my clients have read my books. So they already knew my name, and they looked for me, and then they realized I was a therapist. So, you know, that kind of a thing. So, but it's all been word of mouth or internet. I don't advertise.
Okay. So someone comes to you. What are some of the typical situations that someone would come to you for? Do they come to you for premature ejaculation? Do they come to you
for erectile dysfunction? They come to me. You know, I see everybody. You know, it ranges from performance issues, male and female. You know, I currently have, you know, two clients in my practice who are just working on basic function. You know, but probably the majority of my practice, meaning, you know, 70% plus, will be people who have BDSM or fetish concerns. Otherwise, I work on everything. I've worked on body image issues with people. I work on, as I said, function. I've worked with people who were in abusive relationships. You know, anything and everything
but most
are coming to me because they know of my expertise in BDSM, and that's really what they want to work on.
So they come and they're mortified, or there's a partnership, and one person wants to be tied up, and the other person can't bring themselves to do it, or
Let's put it this way. I'm the wrong person to come to if you want to get a negative message about human sexuality. So people who are mortified or think it's shocking and horrible, chances are they won't come to me because, you know, my bias is out there for the public to read. It's in my, you know, on my therapy page, you know, that, you know, I don't view sexual diversity as mental illness. You know, I don't believe that people need to be cured of their sexuality, so to speak, unless it's a sexuality that harms other people. Like, you know, I don't believe there's a cure for pedophilia, but I believe it should be treated. And I, you know, I obviously am really against it. You know, not all sexual urges are positive sexual urges. Some really cause harm in the world, and that's one of them. But things like BDSM, when you're talking about two consenting adults who want to do
that's
it
different.
Together, you know, and it's fully consensual, then to me, there's nothing that needs to be cured. What usually needs to happen is people need to be better educated and more self-accepted. So...
yeah, so well that's kind of what I meant when I said mortified. I mean, one person in a partnership might expose themselves to the other partner, and the other partner, for example, I'll just give an example. I had a partner once who really liked pain, and during orgasm, like he really liked pain. He liked, you know, nails going into his legs, not nails like a hammer and a nail, but fingernails.
And afterwards,
he would deny that he liked it.
Right. We would call that a blocked sexual energy, right? You know.
So he
would be the kind of person, right. I mean, somebody like that would probably benefit by working on his own denial about what he likes and learning to accept the way that he is and find a way to feel happy with it and make good choices.
And seek
because
it out.
The problem is that when people don't like themselves sexually or they deny themselves or they think something's wrong with themselves, then they tend to fall into very negative cycles. They make very bad choices in relationships. Crappy self-esteem about their sexuality usually leads to crappy self-esteem in relationships.
Yes. Absolutely. And it's lurking in there all the time with the shame and the mm-hmm. guilt.
But I will tell you, some years ago, I had a woman call up, and she wanted to make an appointment for her husband. And the reason she wanted to do it is because she was convinced that he was a sex addict. She had gone to a Christian counselor with him. I'm in Georgia, so there are a lot of Christian counselors. And the Christian counselor had also agreed that he was a sex addict. In their opinion, he was a sex addict because he wanted to have sex every day.
Oh.
Yeah.
How unfortunate.
Yeah, how bad, you know, how cool, gee, lady. You know, and she was really upset because now he was in his 50s and she thought for sure, you know, he'd be over it by his 50s. But no, he still wanted to have an orgasm a day. So clearly he was sick and she wanted me to cure him. You know, that, you know, and it was a, you know, sort of a poignant, ironic moment for me to, you know, have to explain to her that, you know, chances were the problem were her, not him. That he was a guy, it sounded like, with a healthy libido. Maybe it was a stronger libido than other people, and certainly it was a stronger libido than her. But to a sex therapist, you know, a vibrant libido is a sign of good sexual health. People who want to have sex every day, I tend to think that's a healthy thing. You know.
Me too.
Or certainly an orgasm every day. You know?
Right.
To me, the only time that's I don't want to have an orgasm every day is when I'm really depressed, you know?
And then if you had an orgasm every day, it might help get you out of the depression. So
correct.
That's amazing.
Right.
Well,
so
if
sometimes
you just
people have to make the effort to be sexual.
Right, right. Well, I just want to let everyone know that they're listening to Tantra Cafe, a program for spiritual enlightenment. I'm Laurie Hammond, your host. It's my pleasure today to have my amazing guest, Gloria Brand, a PhD in human sexuality, and she's talking to us about BDSM and fetish sex being more possibly normal than many people think. And she's talking to us about how to encourage healthy sexuality in ourselves and in others, which is really kind of as far as I can tell, the message also in Tantra. So it's great that it connects.
I think it is, you know, the message of all enlightened sexual adults is that sex is okay, you know? Sex
it's
is okay.
Good.
Sex is clean. Sex is wonderful. It's a part of life. You know, it's no less important than any other part of life. It should not be more shameful than any other part of life. It's good for the, you know, we have all the scientific research that says that, you know, regular orgasms improve longevity, improve cardiovascular health, improve mood levels. You know, those are proven scientific facts for which there's plentiful data. You know, the holdup is that people, I think really because we don't have enough dialogue, which is why I love talking to you, you know, because you are having this dialogue on a radio show, no less, reaching other people, but I think there isn't adequate dialogue on, you know, positive, self-aware sexuality as opposed to the cultural message, which is don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. If you do it, you'll get a disease. If you do it, you'll die. If you do it, you know, God only knows, you know, you're going to meet a stranger on the internet and, you know, he's going to rape you and, oh, my God. You know, it's a very, very anti-sex culture, and at the same time, it's a culture that consistently sensationalizes and exploits sex. And to me, you know, the enlightened path is right in the middle. You know, it's sex is not dangerous, nor is sex something so sensational. Sex is, or should be, an organic and natural part of human life.
Well, certainly true. And you have, and Gloria has a blog that she writes on regularly, and I just have to tell you all that Gloria's blog is amazing. I've learned so much just from following her. It's only been maybe 2 months that, since I found you. Yeah, since I found you and I started looking at things. I am too. I am too. And tell us a little bit about your books. You have books that I know about, Different Loving and Come Hither. What do you discuss?
Yeah, I haven't written a book since Come Hither. It's been a long time, and I keep going back and forth in my head about whether I want to write another one or not. But my first and probably biggest book, or the best-selling book, was Different Loving, which was really the product of me in my 30s still trying to figure out why was I kinky, why did I love bondage, why did I have these fetishes, did it say something about me, how did people live, and just to, I guess, pass along one thing that I had understood, which is, you don't have to be some freaky character out of a movie. You can be a highly functional person who loves all the things you've always loved, but also has ecstatic sexual experiences on the edge. That's really what the book was about. It was saying, none of this is new. Human beings have always, everything we do now, every kind of sex we have and can think of having, was known to the people 3,000, 4,000 years ago. They were doing these things too. They just didn't have this whole medicalization of sexuality and all the labels and the clinical analyses. When your partner, for example, wanted rough sex in bed, he probably was most comfortable just doing it, not thinking about it. Because if you think about it in terms of today's culture, people would say, oh, that's bad, that's wrong, right? That he needs to have rough sex.
They would say that maybe outwardly, but they might be having rough sex behind closed doors.
Yes, and a lot more people. I mean, that's kind of perhaps one of the most interesting things about studying and focusing on BDSM fetishism is that there's a lot more of that going on out there than anybody might imagine. It's just that most people don't ever talk about it. They just do what they do, or they have some experiences, and they never really attach that much more importance to it. And it's actually, I believe, the minority of people who are so driven to it or wired this way to really need it on a daily basis that really thrash out the meaning of it all.
Yeah, I love what you use the word, the edge. Like in your book, Different Loving, where you talk about having sexual experiences that are at the edge. It seems to me that most people, like entrepreneurs, do entrepreneurialism, including I'm an entrepreneur, so I can speak from experience. Entrepreneurs do their own business because it keeps them at the edge.
Right.
People work out and build their muscles and increase their breathing capacity and do all kinds of physical things that are non-sexual to keep themselves at the edge.
Mm-hmm.
Ice skaters and basketball players and all kinds of athletes do many, many things to keep themselves at the edge. So you're talking about a normal thing, the edge.
That's right. Where most people would say life is lived the most richly and thrillingly. Right? That's what's
so
exciting about the edge
Go ahead.
Oh, just that you feel so fully alive there.
Right.
And like, for a lot of BDSMers, they didn't feel, this is a hard concept for people who are not kinky maybe, but they didn't feel that alive in vanilla sex. They didn't have that intensity of emotion, that intensity of satisfaction, that intensity of relief afterwards from vanilla sex. Because that's a really common phenomenon in kinky people. Whereas, you could bang them silly for hours and it would be, nice, like a massage, like a good massage. But if you put them in bondage, or you pee on them, suddenly it becomes a transcendent experience for them. It just, again, they're fully present, they're fully alive, they're fully turned on, and it can be less obviously sexual, you know, some of the BDSM, than actually
right.
having intercourse. You know, you'll see people in clubs and you'll be thinking, what are they getting out of it, right? They don't even seem to, you know, they're not having orgasms. Nobody is touching their genitals directly. You know, it might just be a spanking. But for them, it may well be, not always, but sometimes it may well be a peak experience that they don't have from what's considered, you know, normal or typical sex. I don't usually, actually, I don't even like the word normal because it's really meaningless sexually, you know.
Right, it doesn't, you're right, exactly. It doesn't mean anything.
No.
Maybe normal is unexplored sex. You know, maybe normal means sex that is done in the dark by two people very quickly and they produce a bunch of babies and they never question it and nothing outside that bed or anything ever happens. But there's not that many people who do that.
Right. If you think about what our culture considers to be normal sex, it is the most antiseptic sex imaginable. It's in the dark, lights off, it only lasts 7 minutes, it's man on top. That's it.
Right.
And
that's kind of
sad. And it's vaginal penetration only. You know?
Right.
It doesn't even, you know, it doesn't even include foreplay. It's really the most, I won't call it primal at all because there's nothing natural and primal about it. It's really sort of primitive and repressed and religious sex.
Yeah.
Because really that is where most of people's ideas about what normal comes from. They really come from the notion of what kind of sex your religion wants you to have.
Right. This is so good.
So
this
creative.
Is such a it's such a hot topic. That's so hot just in itself.
Yeah.
Just exposing that for what it really is.
Mm-hmm.
Exposing control that's been forced upon us by whatever religion or ethnicity, religion, culturally,
mm-hmm.
whatever that we've grown up in, and how we're actually just supposed to make children to keep that particular group going, and there isn't anything pleasurable or anything wonderful or anything to look forward to, and there's no edge to look forward
That's
to
right.
in any of that. It's,
because it isn't about just, pleasure, it's about duty.
Right, the wifely duty.
The wifely duty and the duty of the couple to produce more children to, you know, increase
promulgate
the ranks
that religion
of
or
Judeo-Christian Islamo-religion.
Yeah.
You know.
Really
yeah.
great to expose that. Really, really great to expose that. And it's,
and
I love what you're talking about.
Oh, thanks. And the fact is that if any, you know, look at history or anybody who knows anything about the way people actually live their lives knows that it's always been nearly impossible for people to conform to that model because it's not a realistic model for what a human being's potential really is.
Right. Human beings have so much more creative capacity, and they take it to the edge in every area. So,
you know,
so good.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take another pause for a moment here. But when we come back, I want to talk to you about, if anything has ever shocked you, you know, anyone who's come with a particular situation that's shocked you or something that you were shocked by in yourself, and then I just want to know. I want to know. I think it'd be really interesting to find that out, and then I'll ask you for some advice, too, from
people
in this
particular. Okay.
Yeah, this would be great. So we'll be right back. If you have just tuned in, you're listening to Tantra Cafe. I'm Laurie Handlers, your host, and my guest today is Dr. Gloria Brown, who is a sex therapist. She specializes in BDSM fetish sex, and she has private practice in Georgia, in the state of Georgia. And we'll be right back. Are you somebody who loves adventure? Would you like to create more adventure in your love life? Join me and Gino Allegria on our Red Hot Tantra Tour to India this January 2010. You'll study 6 days of Red Hot Tantra in a palace in Ajmer, in the state of Rajasthan, India's most colorful state. You'll receive 6 days of classroom instruction and then practice together with your beloved in the privacy of your very own palace accommodation. When the course is over, you'll visit the holy city of Pushkar. You'll see the world's greatest tribute to romance, the Taj Mahal, in Agra. And, of course, you'll tour the world-famous Kama Sutra temples in Khajuraho. Please be in touch with me, Laurie Hamlers, at butterflyworkshops.com for more information about this amazing red-hot Tantra tour in January 2010. That's Red Hot Tantra in India. Okay, we're back, and we're kind of rounding down the show. And Gloria, I just want to know, is there any, you know, has there been any particular time that anyone's come to you and you've been shocked, given that you're really open-minded and really open about it all, helping people find their own kink or their own pleasure or their own edge?
You know, I can tell you I've been surprised many times. I've been doing this a long time, and, you know, the wonderful thing about sex is just when you think you've heard it all, you hear something else. You know, so, I mean, I can tell you, you know, story after story of people who've come to me, and it really, you know, and I was really amazed. I had, for example, a man who was not a transgender man, but just he hated his own penis. He hated touching it. He hated everything to do with it. He didn't want to get rid of it. But he just was the most sexually repressed person I had ever worked with. And I had really never met somebody who disliked having orgasms.
Mm.
So that was really an amazing person to work with. And, you know, very intelligent. I love my clients. To me, people who are really willing and ready to work seriously on their sexuality, I think it takes a huge amount of courage because it's such a sensitive, vulnerable place for people, you know.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And, yeah, it's a hard place for people. So that was really amazing to me. And one of the most touching surprises was I once had a dad brought his son to me. His son was in his teens, and I don't usually work with teens, but since the father was coming with the son, and they really, really wanted to see me because they had been to a psychiatrist, and they were really unhappy with the advice they'd gotten, and they knew I was an expert in this field. So they both came, and the son had a very distinct fetish, a very powerful and distinct fetish. And he was already 16, and he'd already had this fetish, and, you know, his interest was only expanding. And the psychiatrist that they'd seen had said, look, it's probably just a phase. He should, you know, he should try to forget about it and pretend it's not happening, and eventually he'll outgrow it.
Hopefully.
And neither father nor son really thought that was, it didn't feel right to them, so they came to see me.
No.
And I told them, you know, he's not going to outgrow it. You know, if he is this way now, and, you know, his whole pattern of behavior, they were really starting to have some problems because he felt so mixed up about it, and the more he tried to suppress it, the more he was doing unfortunate things like snitching money out of his mother's purse to buy fetish magazines, you know, stuff like that. And I said,
right,
you know, that kind of behavior is the result of repression. But what I think really got to me was what was so amazing to me in a happy way was this father and son had the most open, positive relationship I have ever seen. The father had absolutely no desire to you know, cure the son's fetish. He just wanted the kid to be happy. And he wanted to be sure that the kid would stay safe and happy in whatever he wanted to pursue. And that was it.
That's truly amazing.
And that was one of the most beautiful and amazing experiences ever. It really was. Because I was able to work with them both. It took a couple of hours, but I was able to work with them both. I did some follow-up with the kid, and about once a year now, it's been a few years, the kid writes me, and it, you know, it really changed the quality of his life. Because he understood, you know, he wasn't alone, there were other people, this was going to be okay. He didn't have to pretend that it was, you know, one day he was going to be cured and waste his life, if you know what I mean. Waste his youth on thinking he's sick and he's got to change. Instead, I gave him advice on, you know, who to trust and who not to trust. You know, not to hang out with people who are a lot older than him on the internet, for example, but rather to seek out anybody his own age that he could be open with in any way. And, you know, he since has a girlfriend and does this stuff with her, and she's totally aware, and he's as close as ever, maybe even closer to his father as a result of that, because they both sought out a solution, and it was really a beautiful thing. And, you know, just drives home to me the difference between getting that vital acceptance for who you are from, you know, someone you trust, and growing up feeling like you're all alone and there's something really weird about you and thinking you'll never be happy. You know, the difference between the two is the difference between quality of life and misery. So that's my happiest story.
That's beautiful. You know, it reminded me of I didn't like the film, but the play Equus. Just reminded me of the play Equus, which is another one of my favorites, where the boy has sexual feelings when he's riding on the horses.
Right.
But he also feels that it's against religion. It's against religion, and so he's torn inside, and it's such an intense thing, but you just kind of demonstrated that in this example.
We are who we are, and our sexual formation really kind of takes place early in life and before we have conscious control over it. If we had conscious control over it, you know, everybody would opt to fit that ridiculous Victorian religious model, because that, you know, we're all under that same pressure to conform, you know. But you can't pick your sexuality. You are who you are. And the best advice and the best form of healing is to respect it within yourself and love yourself as you are, and then try to make the best choices you can.
Right, and set about a course of action about finding other people that you can play with who will let you be who you are and be happy to be with you on your edge with who you are.
Exactly.
It's really terrific. So let me come back to this as BDSM, as a transformational form of sexuality. It's so similar to everything that I teach people in Tantra. I mean, I want people to love who they are, worship and adore themselves, become their own beloved, and then look at everyone else as beloved mirror out there, rather than being dependent on anyone or whatever. And it seems to me that what you're talking about is the same exact thing. It's the same exact expression. Find who you are, be okay with yourself, love yourself who you are, and then find ways to share that. If someone wanted to experiment, I'm going to just ask the questions, like, if someone's listening and they want to experiment with BDSM or some kind of fetish sex, and they know it, obviously they know it because of everything you just said, you are who you are sexually. Let's say they know it, but they've never told anyone, or they've never experimented except behind their own closed doors. You know, they fantasize about it, but they've not told anyone. What kind of advice would you give them?
Well, I would encourage them, of course, to find their own safe place within it. I don't think it's a good idea to just go out and experiment until you feel ready to do it. In other words, you feel secure within yourself that, you know, you're willing to, you know, jump out of that airplane or sit in that sweat lodge or whatever it is, you know, that and that you're there for the experience and you're going to be okay, whatever you discover. So I think that is important. And, of course, it's always great if you can get as much education as you can. There are a lot of classes out there. There are a lot of groups. There's plenty of stuff to read, my books. There are lots of other books, you know, to really get a sense of where you're going with this or maybe where you want to go. And the rest is about making it happen.
Breathing. The rest is about breathing.
You know, making it happen for yourself, having a vision of, you know. I try to encourage people to, you know, become the people they are. Not to change into new people, but to fully be themselves.
If now, you know, how would somebody get your book?
Amazon, just type Gloria Brame, B-R-A-M-E, and my books will pop up.
Okay, great. So people can find out about this. Go ahead. I'm sorry I cut you off.
Fine. No, that's no problem.
So, Gloria, it's so enlightening to speak with you. Really, it is. I mean, you're so easy to talk to and to explore this
easy.
With.
Thank you.
to explore this with. I think it's my favorite subject.
I could just talk that gardening and my puppies. I could talk about sex, gardening, and puppies until everybody passed out. My three obsessions.
Well, I imagine that they all fulfill a different thing in you. You know,
they do.
A different aspect of you. Well, I mean, this isn't the first time on any of my shows that I've talked about this. I mean, I've had other authors and I've had other people talk about it, but there is something about talking about it with you that makes it feel, I hate this word, but I'm just going to say, because you said before you hated it, and it's so, who would want to be normal? But it's, talking to you about it makes it feel so normal.
I am the most normal dominatrix you might ever meet. That's how I see it, you know. What's odd about me? Okay, so I like to hurt people in bed, but they want to be hurt. You know, we're close,
right.
We're friends. You know, there's a bond.
Right.
It's a yin and a yang thing. That's all. You know, it's about suspending old judgments, getting rid of all labels. Once upon a time, we actually didn't have so many labels for sexuality. And sometimes I wonder if maybe that was in its own way. I mean, really where we have our concept now of, you know, what's normal and what's not normal is really according to what religions, Western religions, once deemed sinful or not sinful. It's almost exactly the same. If you look at the old religious writing, basically the only kind of sex that they believe, that religions believe God approves of, is the kind that makes babies, period. And anything else was considered sinful. And then here we are, it's the 21st century, and a lot of people who would say, oh, well, you know, I don't really believe in sin, still think that, you know, if they do a funky kind of sex, if they have gay sex or they have S&M sex or maybe even tantric sex, you know, that's sick. No.
Right.
It's not.
Right. But as I said really in my opening and I'll say this with closing, that I may not know about a particular subject, but just the thought of it might be a little scary.
Mm-hmm.
And as time, the fantasy of it might be very, very exciting and tantalizing. I'm all of that. I'm all that in myself, and I imagine I'm not about it. I imagine that what you're discussing is everybody, pretty much everybody, including it all. The scary part, a little painful part, the fantasy part, the exciting part, the tantalizing. That's really what makes life, that yeah. edge in life. So, well, I thank you so much.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say, if I could leave one message to everybody, you know, when they think about S&M, just keep in mind, we don't all do S&M the same. There is no one universal S&M. Not every S&Mer you meet is into pain. Not every S&Mer you meet will have a fetish. So just remember, it's a diverse group of people. You know, just again, you know, there are lots of gradations. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
So much,
this was
Gloria.
Fabulous.
What a wonderful time having you on the show. If you just tuned in and you were came in towards the end, I'm Laurie Handler. This is Tantra Cafe. You just were listening to Gloria Bram, a PhD in human sexuality, one of the most interesting guests I've ever had on the show. And what a juicy, scary, hot, and hidden topic. I love it. Thank you so much. I'm saying namaste from Tantra Cafe.